And now back to your regular programming.
You've never heard less productive analysis. Heard nationally, it's the Believe in FCS Football Podcast with Joe DeLeon and Sean Anderson.
On today's episode of the Believe in FCS Football Podcast, we have an awesome interview that I did with Southeastern Louisiana head coach Frank Selfo. Before we get to that interview, though, folks, I want to tell you about today's sponsor, that being Bet Online. Our partners at Bet Online continue to be the number one source for all of your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest odds, news, and sports developments, including this year's Wimbledon Finals, Major League Baseball, and the latest fighting news, and even next season's early NFL futures. Head to their website today or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code BELIEVE to get that bonus and get into the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. We're right now in the offseason. How have things been going so far in this transition from spring ball to the offseason workouts?
It's been good. I think this is this is the time you reevaluate what you did in the spring and the guys you did it with, and then you carried over in the summer. And what happens in the summertime is that it really separates the guys who are really here for a purpose and then the guys that just like to be on the team. And then that's where your leadership comes from. We start coming together as a family. We're not there yet. We still got a lot of things that we got to do and make better. And we're working on that on a daily basis. But I'm really starting to see some things come together that I think are important for us for future success.
So, Coach, you're talking about having to build up and figure out this roster and that transition into this upcoming season. I think one of the biggest transitions for this team is going to be replacing Cole Kelly, who was a Walter Payton Award winner, was statistically so dominant. Right now, what kind of hurdles does that present for you and your team? And how has that process been so far trying to find that the next starting quarterback for your squad?
Yeah, it really is critical. Cole, and really should have won the Walter Payton Award twice. I don't mind saying that. I'm not even biased. I could have just sat back, looked at the numbers, and made that decision. But I think what's so important is that with Cole on the field and numbers and what you saw each week, that's one thing. But I think his leadership was the other thing that really the impact that he made on our organization was so critical. So it's not only replacing the player, it's replacing the person and the leadership and the things that he gave us off the field. And I think that's what's important. So we're working towards that right now. We got some guys that are trying to step up, take over that role, and to allow us to move forward and continue to play well.
Yeah, I was one of the advocates for Cole to win the award for a second time. I was pretty surprised that he didn't. But, Coach, right now that quarterback competition, if you don't mind me asking, has there been any progress, and how many guys are maybe – in the fight for that spot?
Well, I think right now it's Cephas Johnson and Kobe Suits are the two guys that are pretty much have separated themselves a little bit between one and two. And then Eli Sawyer and Bauer Sharp are right behind those two guys. So we've got some quality depth. We've got some quality players in that room. And we're just trying to, as camp goes on, summertime is important again. And then camp's going to be important. That's another phase that we go through. And we're not afraid to play two quarterbacks. In 2019, we played two quarterbacks. Cole was the backup then. Chase and Virgil was the starter. Then Cole was a situational guy. So that could possibly end up being part of our solution. But we're looking to find a starter. But if we don't, if two guys are really playing well, then we're not going to be afraid to use either one of them.
So, Coach, I noticed a little bit of an interesting trend with some of the quarterbacks that you've worked with over your career, and I noticed there were a couple guys who in particular fit the physical profile that Cole Kelly had. Nick Foles was referenced in your bio on the website. Blake Bortles, all really big quarterbacks. I gotta ask, is there any intentionality with that, or is it just been pure coincidence?
No, I like bigger guys. I think if you're smaller, it does have some not to say small quarterbacks can't be great. Now, Russell Wilson's as good as it gets, right? And But I think bigger guys do have some advantages built in because of the, especially in the pass game, being able to see, you know, vision. I think that's, you know, that's a key in anticipation. Some of the windows that they're able to see over instead of through the line of scrimmage. So, you'd like to have taller guys. But at the end of the day, that's just one box, you know, Joe. So it's not like, you just throw it up in the air and say, if he's not 6'4", we don't want him. We don't do that. That's one of the things that you do. Maybe if you got two things that are equal, two guys that are pretty equal, might take the taller one over the shorter one if all things are equal. But there's so many things that go into being a good quarterback, you know, and that certainly is one of them. And if we can, we'll find a bigger one, you know, at that position. We'll do that at just about any position, to tell you the truth, you know. So you'd rather have a big, good guy over a small, good guy.
Yeah, very unique ending up noticing that. And it's cool to hear you talk about how that's something that you intentionally look for with quarterbacks. It seems like there tends to be a little bit of a trend right now for these smaller guys like Kyler Murray, like Russell Wilson in the NFL and across some of these FCS teams as well. Coach, you did have that opportunity to make that stop with the Jacksonville Jaguars after being so many different amazing places. How has that opportunity to work with the Jaguars, especially when they were so good, how has that helped prepare you for the role that you currently have as the head coach for Southeastern Louisiana?
Well, when you get to the highest level of anything, it does help you prepare for anything else, right? And I think what the organization itself and the way that it's structured, we're doing a lot of the same things, everything from evaluation and practice and off-season programs, in-season practice schedules, things like that. And I think what it does, it lends itself because it is such a you don't have recruiting at the professional level. So what do you do with all that time that you're out on the road recruiting, bringing in recruits or evaluating? Well, you're working on ball. You're spending time doing that. So we've kind of combined those two things. Obviously, we have to recruit. We got to get good players in here. We don't have free agency, although the transfer portal has kind of lent itself for that. But what we're able to do now is that we're able to take all of the things that kind of I got from there, but then, you know, input from my staff also, and use them on a day-to-day basis here to maximize the time that we have without spending way too much time in the office sitting around doing anything. So I think it's allowed me to streamline and organize so that our coaches can be productive without having to spend an inordinate amount of time here.
You mentioned the free agency aspect of college football and how it's starting to become more and more prevalent. I'm just curious, from your FCS perspective, what kind of limitations has that maybe caused or hurdles has that caused for you as a head coach?
I think, you know, probably the biggest impact that it's had on us is that FBS could transfer to FCS and be eligible immediately. So we were able to, there were some quality guys out there that were looking to just play one more year or, you know, 2 years or something like that and be able to drop down to us and be eligible to play right off the bat. Well, now using the one-time transfer rule, they can jump in the portal and transfer FBS to FBS and have the same opportunity to be able to play immediately. So that's kind of tilted the scales a little bit where we've got we're not getting the same guy that we might have had a chance to get before. Cole Kelly might not have come to us if he could have gone to another FBS school and been eligible immediately. I don't know that, but, you know, that's an example. And so I think that's where that's one of the obstacles maybe that it's presenting. I think from a positive standpoint, there's a lot more options out there. There's more players that we have access to because of the portal that we can go in, look at, evaluate, contact schools and talk about those players and see if they fit what we're looking for, either on the field, off the field, personality wise. And if it is, then we, you know, make a run at them. But it has changed the way recruiting is. I think the high school kids are the ones that get hurt more than anything else because there's less opportunities for them. So it allows us to get a ready-made player to plug in and play, but it's got to fit your culture. You got to be real careful with the culture that you don't bring somebody in that upsets the things that you got going on. So that's really important for us when evaluating guys, is to find out what type of person he is away from the football field.
On the recruitment side of things, it obviously does provide a lot of options, but it also provides options for guys on your roster if they do want to leave. Have you found any struggles with that as well? Or do you think if you're doing the right things, those guys are going to want to stick around and continue to develop? Just in general, it feels like a lot of guys are really quick to, if things aren't going their way, they leave. So like, I wasn't afforded the opportunity to have the transfer portal when I played. Most guys stuck it out, they developed, and then eventually got on the field. Do you think that's a little bit more the case these days, that people are impatient?
Absolutely. You see that. And it bears itself out in the portal. I met with our compliance director yesterday, and it's about a 50-50 split right now. The guys that leave with a scholarship, they leave a program, and only about 50% of them, and the numbers are bearing itself out, they end up in another place with another scholarship.
Wow.
And it's a shame that a lot of these players are getting bad advice. They're getting, whether it be from their parents or from their buddy next door or from their uncle, whatever it is, they're getting bad advice. Look, if you go somewhere else, you're getting cheated there, you're getting screwed over, go somewhere else, you can go to a bigger, better place. And those guys aren't getting an opportunity. And what's happening is that a lot of these guys aren't going back to college. They're giving up a pre-college education based on some bad advice that they got. And instead of really having some introspective look at what the heck's going on, why can't I be a little bit better? I tell the kids all the time, look in the mirror, not in the window. Quit looking out there, seeing there's something else. Look in the mirror and make that person a whole lot better. And, that's where, like you said, it's maybe a few years back when you didn't have as many opportunities to do what you wanted to do, you just grounded out. And you see guys develop that way. You see guys as an 18, 19-year-old, immature, not quite ready to play. They struggle with some things. But then you see them as 20 and 21 and 22 really become great players for you. Because for what you said, they stuck it out and they allowed themselves to grow. When you go into another organization, there's a brand new learning curve, new coaches, new terminology, all those things. So it's not like you jump into that spot exactly where you left the last one. That's not the case. The case is that you're going to take a step backwards until you learn it. The coaches learn you, you learn the coaches. And we've been fortunate here. We don't have a lot of guys that jump in the portal. We got a couple of guys that some schools have tried to raid us on. We've had some issues with a couple of FBS schools that are coming in trying to recruit our guys. That's going to happen. It's not technically, I guess, legal for them to do that by the NCAA laws rules, but who knows? NCAA don't follow their own rules half the time, so it really doesn't matter.
So we had Tucker Kraft on our show feed, the South Dakota State tight end, and he kind of talked about and told us that he was offered some pretty big money by these FBS programs to leave South Dakota State, was not even in the portal. And I know that there's not really a solution to this, but I'm just curious from your eyes, and that's very disheartening as an FCS advocate to hear that that's happening at a program like SLU, that someone's trying to come in and take your players from the FBS. What do you think a potential solution can be to that, if there even is one?
Well, I'm not sure there is one. Here's what you'd like to say is that there's a code of conduct in our profession, and that it's your job to recruit guys, coach them, and develop them, right? And make them a really good player. Well, it's your job to go find those guys, and if a guy does jump into the portal, then go do everything you can to get him. He's open, he's wide open, right? But if he's not in the portal, at least have the morals not to go raid somebody else's football team. I think that's where the problem lies. And head coaches say, we don't do that. Well, they're lying. They know it's taking place. They know it's going on. They wink, wink, and they say, don't tell me it's happening. But you know exactly that it is taking place, and those coaches know that it's taking place. And, so that's what's a shame about the whole thing. If a guy's in the portal, he's open season. But if he's not, then let's stay above board. And I think as a profession, we got to handle that ourselves. NCAA is not going to – again, they don't have any power anymore. And they really don't have – an enforcement team to take a look at all the issues that are taking place right now. And, their hands are full with everything else. And they put themselves in this position. But I think as a coaching community, we have to govern ourselves and call our own selves out. And when, you know, when guys cross the line like that, they need to be called out.
Right. I think that it's certainly a big integrity issue. And those that argue for being able to do that, I think is pretty crazy. Like, this is supposed to be a competitive field where you shouldn't be stealing guys from rosters. You can't do that in the NFL. But Coach, I really appreciate you taking the time to hop on here today. Really appreciate your insight on a number of things. That's all we had for you. We're going to be rooting for you, though, this season, and looking forward to seeing how Southeastern Louisiana does.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. And appreciate what you're doing for FCS football, man. As much exposure that we can get, we want. And, you know, I just think it's – we got a really good brand of football. And I've never coached in it before I got here. And, you know, I've learned – there's some great programs around the country and some coaches that do one heck of a job coaching. And I've been at every level, and they can coach at any level and as well as anybody else. So the opportunity to go against those guys week in and week out on a national scale is exciting for me. And I love the system. I love the playoff system. It's just a good time right now.
Of course. Well, thank you so much, Coach.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.